You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome into ESPN FC. Kate Murray and Ali Moreno here with you in the studio. A little later on, we'll be hearing from Stevie Nicol, Nadim Anua, and Don Hutchison as well. But first, we'll welcome in Sid Lowe because we will be talking about La Liga. There is much to discuss. Sid has been on his travels in the Champions League games this week. Ali, you saw both Barcelona and Atleti play. This has been the response to Barcelona's loss to Bayern. Another thrashing here, it says, in AS. Mundo Deportivo, this is what Gerard Piqué said after it, isn't it? It is what it is and we are who we are. The sad realities they sport. Not looking good, is it?
Nope.
Far, far away. So that recent loss has seen some of the internal issues come back to the surface. Sid, what is the status with Ronald Koeman's job? There's a lot of talk about him possibly being on his way out.
Yeah, well, you may have seen that after the game that Gian Laporta, the president, did a very short mobile phone film video, around about 30 seconds long, in which he asked for patience, in which he asked for the fans to give their trust to this board, to the people running the club, to sort the situation out. Within that video, he also, though, opened by saying that he was every bit as disappointed and indignant as the fans were. Now, of course, when you're asking for calm and for tranquility and to have trust, that's not really aided by the use of a word like indignant. And of course, that is aimed and focused, I think, at Ronald Koeman. We've known for some time, not least because this has been played out partly in public, that Laporta doesn't have a huge amount of faith in Koeman. Koeman this week in the build-up to the game was forced to say, no, there's no problem. Well, there were one or two things we talked about, but there isn't really a problem. He knows that Laporta has spoken to the media about him. He's publicly said that he knows that, which of course deepens the problem. And essentially, this is a marriage of convenience that has become really quite inconvenient for everybody. Now the situation basically is that Koeman is largely in a job because of the cost of sacking him.
So they can't afford to fire him. I mean, the word crisis is bandied around a lot in Spanish football, Sid, but is this a crisis that Barcelona are in?
Well, it depends what you mean. It's a crisis because it already was a crisis, rather than because of this result or rather than because of the situation with Koeman. These are added elements to something that was already very bad. And I think that's one of the things that we need to do when we look back on this game and look back on the response. And you've mentioned there what Gerard Piqué said, you know, it is what it is. This is just the way it is. This is the situation. This is a reality at the moment. And of course, that's a reality we already knew about. And to put it in the most simple terms, you do not lose Lionel Messi unless there's a very, very good reason for it. So that's the extent of the crisis. And this is another element of it in terms of fixing it. We know how bad the situation is financially. The fact that Messi went, the fact that Griezmann went, the fact that other players didn't go who they were trying to get rid of. And now you've got an extra dimension to it, I suppose, which is the situation of a coach. But I must admit, personally, there's a bit of me that thinks, well, if there's a problem with a coach, given everything else that's going on, given a debt, the problem with a coach is a relatively small one in the grand scheme of things.
It is what it is right now, and we are who we are. Fair comment from Gerard Piqué?
Absolutely. And a desperate comment by Gerard Piqué in the sense that he knows it. He feels it. He's out there on the field, and he knows very well, playing against Bayern Munich, that they do not belong on the same field with Bayern Munich. Not right now. So they cannot compete at that level. They're not at the elite level. They're not in the elite conversation anymore. It reminded me of when the Olympics just finished. In the long distance runs in track and field in the Olympics, when everybody starts that race, everybody's together. Everybody's sort of jogging at the same pace. And then once you get to that last lap, the very top, the ones that are really gonna medal, they have a kick in them. They have a second, third, fourth, and fifth gear. As long as the game is played at the same pace, at a normal, comfortable pace, Barcelona can compete. But the moment you play against a team that has a different gear, that has a kick, that can take that last lap, no chance. Barcelona can no longer compete. And you see it across the board. You see it in the back line, you see it in the midfield, you see it in the front line. So while we want to point the finger at Ronald Koeman, and that's natural given the circumstances, this goes beyond Ronald Koeman. It's to the point that Sid was just mentioning, is, you know, in terms of what the structure of this club is right now, Ronald Koeman really is dead man walking in some ways, but it's a small detail as compared to what the issues are in general for Barcelona. And the issues in general on the field are that they may compete in La Liga, they may contend for a title, and perhaps that's enough. But when it comes to playing the elite clubs in Europe, they are no longer in the conversation.
And yet, Sid, there's a feeling, it seems, from Ronald Koeman that once the injured players come back, it could be a very different looking side.
Yeah, that's what he said after the game, wasn't it? He even put a timescale on this. I believe he said that in the next 3 or 4 weeks, this will look very different. Gerard Piqué said, I'm convinced that we will end up competing. And you know, you can see part of the argument for that. Let's put this in very simple terms. This is the first time that Barcelona have played Bayern Munich in 13 months, which actually is not as long ago as it feels. Since then, they've lost Antoine Griezmann, Luis Suarez and Lionel Messi. So of course they're not going to be as good as Bayern Munich, given that Bayern Munich put 8 goals past them even back then, before this debilitation of the team. But then you can add to that that Dembélé is injured, that Coutinho's only just come back and hasn't played in 2021, that Braithwaite is injured, that Kun Aguero is injured, that Ansu Fati is injured. And so I think Barcelona are entitled to believe that some of those issues may well be resolved. And I think in a way, and this by the way is a kind of a central part of the debate in terms of judging where Barcelona are at and judging what this performance was like. I think in a way the approach from Koeman was one of thinking, well, we're probably not going to win, so let's protect ourselves. Let's live to fight another day, and perhaps in 2-3 weeks' time, maybe 2-3 months' time, things look slightly different when all of those players are available. One of the questions, of course, to go back to what we were talking about a minute ago, is whether Koeman makes it that far.
Should he be confident for these players coming back?
Well, he may be confident, but some of those players were around when they were losing 8-2 to Bayern Munich. And so for me, when we focus on this game alone, I think we're not looking at the big picture of Barcelona. It's that we have seen signs of this decline for a while now. And so go back to the game against PSG in last year's Champions League, and that picture, that still picture of Gerard Piqué trying to chase down Mbappé and just desperately just kind of grabbing onto his jersey. You can actually have that same picture in your mind watching Leon Goretzka and Sergio Busquets competing for a ball. So there's a question of lack of athleticism in Barcelona that goes beyond Ronald Koeman, that goes beyond the current situation of the club as a whole. There are just questions of whether this team physically, I'm not even talking about, hey, can we pass the ball? Can we trap the ball? Can we keep possession of the ball? No, physically, athleticism, can they compete at the highest level? And on the evidence that we have seen, not only in the game against Bayern Munich, but PSG last year, then Bayern Munich the year before, they just really can't run. So in a 50-50 challenge, who do you think is going to win? Leon Goretzka or Sergio Busquets? Well, Leon Goretzka, yeah. Who's going to win a foot race? Kylian Mbappe or Gerard Piqué? Kylian Mbappe. But you see that across the board with Barcelona in every key position. I just mentioned two players down the spine of the team. Let's keep going up the spine of the team. Luke de Jong, who is he going to beat at this point in his career? Nobody. Nobody. And so, look, it's a limited team right now. Now, when they get these players back, they may look a little bit different. But there's still questions that they haven't answered. And there's still issues that they haven't answered, even when they get Dembélé. They get Dembélé back, what's the question going to be? Well, is he going to stay healthy for a while? Is he going to be the player that they expect him to be? Those are questions that we've been asking for 2-3 years now with Ousmane Dembélé. So now we're relying on him being the savior? No, no thanks. No, sir, not right now.
Sid, I mentioned that you were at that game. What was the feeling like there? Was there a tense atmosphere in the stands?
It was very curious, actually. Before the game, there was, I think, a sense of pessimism. There was a belief that Barcelona probably couldn't compete with Bayern Munich. And for about 20 minutes, when Barcelona played reasonably well at the start of the game, the stadium was noisy and there was an optimism. But there was also, I think, you could really feel a sense of Barcelona fans thinking, wow, we're not that bad. This is kind of okay. We're competing here, which was unexpected. Of course, the problem is that 20, maybe 25 minute period didn't last. And then after that, the game just went away from them. And I think that approach was to kind of hang on, to kind of be in the game in some way, or at least not to be beaten badly. And so I think by the end there was frustration, and of course we heard it most obviously in the whistles for Sergio Roberto, by the way, for what it's worth, to make him, the man carrying the can full of Barcelona's problems seems completely absurd to me. But that's perhaps another issue for another day. But I think more than anything else, there was just that sense, as Piqué said and as Koeman said after the game, that this is kind of what we knew. We sort of knew this situation was like this, and this was a confirmation of something much, much bigger.
The realization for Barcelona and Barcelona fans that when they were at their best and they were playing against other teams in Europe, that they were bossing the possession, that they had control of the game, that other teams, even playing at their best, had no chance. Now, they're one of those other teams that even playing at their best, they cannot compete against Bayern Munich.
Sid, you were at the Atleti game as well. I mentioned that. So you've been obviously very busy. It was the first time Antoine Griezmann was back at home since he returned to Atleti, and there have been reports of whistles in the stands. How strong was it?
It's very, very difficult to answer that. You're talking about a stadium with 40,000 people in it. You're talking about a division of opinions when he comes on. There's some cheers, there's some applause, there's some whistles mixed up all together. It's very hard to get a proper take on what the balance is, whether it's more than half a whistling him, whether it's less than half, whether it's only a very small pocket. It was very, very loud. The whistles of him were very, very loud. But even that's hard to judge because, of course, imagine the type of sound that we're talking about. A whistle is higher pitched. It's more shrill. It kind of irritates your ear more than the noise of a cheer or an applause. And so I think there's no doubt about it that there were a lot of fans who were expressing their disgust, but at least wanted him to know that they didn't like the way that he left before, that they weren't happy about the way that was handled, which is not to say they won't cheer when he scores his first goal for Atletico. They absolutely will. But it was definitely a lot of people. It would be so, so hard, though, to put a number on it. And certainly TV footage seemed to show more people applauding than whistling.
And how important is it for him to get that first goal? Surely that's going to help a little bit.
I'll say the same thing about Antoine Griezmann that I said when he was at Barcelona. It is critically important for him to showcase his skill set in the attacking half. All the hard work and all the passion and all the unselfish work that he does, fantastic. But that was not enough at Barcelona, and it won't be enough at Atletico Madrid either. He can make a difference for this team if he is impactful in the attacking half. They have enough workers. They have enough guys that could close down space and can defend. They need guys that can really break somebody down, that can create an opportunity, that can score a goal either by themselves or they can combine with others to create another opportunity for somebody else. He has to be that kind of player. If I'm an Atletico Madrid fan, I'm thinking, all right, Koke can do this, Llorente can do this, but now we need goal scorers. It can't just be Suarez, it has to be Griezmann as well.
Sid, let's talk a little bit about La Liga sides in the Champions League. Real Madrid aside, what's the reaction been in Spain to those not really getting the results that they may have hoped for in their opening games?
Yeah, disappointment. A real sense of disappointment. I mean, look, in the case of Barcelona, as we've already talked about, it was to be expected. I think the Atletico Madrid result is a very disappointing one. And also, by the way, potentially a very damaging one. This is a very, very difficult group. In theory, at least, they would have looked at this and thought this is a game that they should have won and needed to win because it may be the weakest team in the group, although some Porto fans probably will think that's unfair, and it's at home. So that's very, very disappointing. The way that Villarreal played and the excitement that game, I think, mitigates a little bit the disappointment at a draw and the fact that they had a chance late on to win it. I think Sevilla as well, because Sevilla seemed to have done very good business in the summer window. They managed to keep hold of Jules Koundé. I think there's a belief that they could compete, maybe even compete for the league title this year and do something very good in the Champions League. And so I think the Sevilla result in particular was disappointing from a Spanish point of view. That said, of course, it was also a kind of bizarre game, you know, a game in which it was penalty after penalty, then a biblical storm, then a red card for one of the most ludicrous dives you've ever seen. And so it was a kind of a special game, but it's definitely one that has left, I think, a lot of people in Spain concerned about whether this is more than just a one-off, whether this might actually be a trend and a problematic one for Spanish football.
Thanks, Sid Lowe, for joining us. There is more talk on everything that we did see in the Champions League, including La Liga's sides and what it means for them, on the Gab and Jules podcast. You can download that wherever you get your podcasts, and Jules is sporting yet another top. I think he's got a little deal.
I'm sure that was for free.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't a search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
So let's bring you up some of Thursday's notable results in the Europa League. Rangers beaten by Lyon. Leicester City taking on Napoli. That one finished 2-2. West Ham beat Dinamo Zagreb. There was a comeback from Real Betis against Celtic. And we're underway. Galatasaray with a 1-0 win over Lazio as well. Stevie and Don are joining us now. Oh, look at them. It's like a battle of the background. Who's wins, Ali?
who's got more wood shelving going on?
Don's looks a bit wonky, doesn't it?
What's that?
Don's looks a bit wonky.
Well, maybe does the it? Cameras. The camera maybe. What? Did you just say wonky?
Wonky.
Okay. I do not know what that means, but yes, it kind of looks
wonky. Lopsided.
Yeah. Okay.
Lopsided.
All right.
Gosh, Britisms. All right, let's talk, Don. Declan Rice, West Ham beating Zagreb 2-0. Tell me.
It was immense. I don't know if you've seen my Twitter handle tonight, Kay, but I'm putting it out there. I watched Jude Bellingham in the Champions League this week, and he's incredible alongside Erling Haaland. And I mentioned about them two, their price tags being close to £100 million. I would be stunned if Declan Rice doesn't come into that conversation, because his first European game proper for West Ham tonight, and he absolutely ran the show. He scored the second goal. Antonio got West Ham's first. Difficult away place to go in Zagreb. It could have been a tricky tie. But Declan Rice was incredible. I was at West Ham with Michael Carrick for 4 years, and I trained with Michael every single day, and I knew he was going to go right to the very top. And I see it in exactly the same in Declan Rice. I watch him play. He's versatile. He can play in multiple positions in midfield. He can play as a six. He can play as an eight. West Ham were far too good for Zagreb, so that's a great win for them. But as I said, Declan Rice is just getting better with every single game.
Stevie, I know you had your eyes on other games tonight, but what are your thoughts on Declan Rice as a player?
I'm with Don. You know, Frankie and I have been going back and forward about how he thinks that the PSG, the one piece of the puzzle they're missing, is a Kante type of player. And Declan Rice, I think, is absolutely the of the same mould. He absolutely, 100%, holds that West Ham side together, wins the ball back, gives it, but has more than just the defensive side of the game. So I'm with Don. Declan Rice is going to one of the top teams in the world, no question.
Stevie, I'll stick with you, though. The game you were watching, Leicester City taking on Napoli, it finished 2-2. What are your takeaways from this one?
Oh, Leicester City defending against Napoli, I think you meant. I mean, my goodness. Yeah, Leicester started well. They got the goal from Jose Perez. But after that, I mean, the rest of the first half was just an absolute bombardment in Leicester's penalty box. I mean, Schmeichel turns out, in my opinion, man of the match for Leicester. That tells you all you need to know. And the fact that this game ends 2-2, Leicester were 2-0 up. I mean, incredibly, Harvey Barnes put them 2-0 up after about 65 minutes. And I'm thinking, I'm scratching my head going, how is this possible? But deservedly so, Napoli came back. Osimhen got two goals. And actually, Napoli were unlucky not to go and get another one. Yes, you can say that Leicester had some players out. Sun Shu and Tielemann came in at half-time. Vardy came on. James Maddison came on. But my goodness, you talk about a football lesson. And Leicester City were at the final whistle, thanking the lucky stars that they actually got something from this game.
Don, did you have an eye on that game too?
I did, I watched it. It was incredible, Kay. And I think Napoli might have been a little bit stunned at the atmosphere at the King Power, because the fans and the stadium and the noise, it was electric. And Leicester started really well. But I was with Stevie, I was watching the game thinking, how on earth have Leicester got themselves 2-0 up here when every couple of minutes Napoli were bombarding Schmeichel with shots, Osimhen was missing chances, Insigne was missing chances, they were creating chances from midfield. I think in the end Napoli had 22 attempts, and then Osimhen in the second half scored a couple of goals. And it's one of them games where I think when you analyse it, if you're Brendan Rodgers, you'll analyse it tomorrow morning, you'll think, we probably could have won that. And then you really look at the tape and you watch it over and over again, you think, actually, we were lucky to draw that, because Napoli were by far the better of the sides.
We just heard your praise for Declan Rice, Don. What about Victor Osimhen? What a player he is, eh?
Oh, he's incredible. I commentated on him about 18 months ago and he's quite raw, and he got his $70 million move or euro move, and he looks a real player. He's a little bit raw. I think if you see some of the chances that he missed in the first half, you could see the confidence just start to drain out of him. But what he is, he's a character, because he doesn't let his head drop. He keeps on making the same runs, so he's sure of himself. He backs himself even when he misses chances. He doesn't then come short. You see strikers come short when they're losing confidence in front of the goal. They come out the 18-yard box. He doesn't. He makes the right runs. He runs in behind. His touch is good. He's very, very good in the air. Second goal, if you've seen it, he hung in the air for so long. And a little dink finish for the first goal. So Napoli have got a proper player there.
And nice stuff. Let's take a quick look at some of the Conference League results as well. Some of the notable ones there.
What?
Oh, yeah. Another competition to enjoy. Roma continuing this fine start under Jose Mourinho, 5-1 over CSKA. Slavia Prague beat Union Berlin 3-1. And Rennes and Tottenham playing out a 2-2 draw.
Conference League? What?
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Listen, we've got some CONCACAF Champions League action to
convenient
show you as well. We've got lots of highlights to get you through. Philadelphia, the last remaining team in the competition at this point, a 48th minute, and we're going to see a penalty awarded to Philly. Remember, Club America coming into this one with a 2-0 lead.
Right. So this was important.
Very important.
This is exactly what you want. And now, is it a penalty? Is it inside? Is it outside? Shrivilko's taken down. He's giving us a penalty, and then you think, okay, this is what you need, Philadelphia Union. Jamiro Monteiro, I know. No.
Second bite at it. Memo Choi says, not today, thank you.
Okay. No! was the moment, and then after
It just was not to be. Nicolas Benedetti's shot, deflection, goes in. America leading 1-0, and that makes it 3-0 on aggregate.
You think about what the pressure of making that penalty would have meant for America. They would have had to defend. And okay, Santi Solari, friend of the show, he's excited. Beautiful hair, by the way. Gorgeous hair.
Stunning hair. What about this from a Henry Martino kind of range, Ali?
Oh, yeah, you think? Yes, it is. little touch and tackle there on the right-hand side. Okay, Santi. All right, touch and tackle here. Gets a little fortunate, but that's all right. He doesn't care. Everybody falls over except him. He gets his head up and then finds Martin at the back post. Took a little while to finish. Doesn't matter. 2-0. See you later, Philadelphia Union.
So, Club America advancing to the final.
Oh, the dream is gone.
Tonight it will be the conclusion between Cruz Azul and Monterrey. It's another year with no MLS side winning the CONCACAF Champions League. I think that I may have said that before, Ale.
Yes, a few times. Most time. Actually, all the time. And that's part of the problem. That's part of the issue, is that you get to this sort of stage and you're thinking, okay, the difference between Liga MX and MLS, which is a point of discussion for MLS and the offices of MLS, is the people that are fans of this league of Major League Soccer, they want to see us getting closer. When we talk about us, we talk about MLS, us getting closer to Liga MX. And the way that you see that, the way you evaluate that, is that in this moment, you get to the semifinal CONCACAF Champions League, you want to see an MLS team advance to the final. You want to see an MLS team winning the competition. Because up until then, up until that happens, it's all a whole lot of conversation, a whole lot of excitement, but not a whole lot of results. And this is a business that's evaluated on results. You want to get close to Liga MX? You got to win some of these games.
Do you think it's a problem, Nadim? Obviously, it's something that you'll be well aware of from your time here.
I kind of believe in what Ali's saying there, to be honest. And whenever you see the Mexican sides go up against the MLS sides, especially in sort of knockout stages of things, they just feel a bit more clinical. They feel like they've just got that little bit extra where they can turn on in a moment. They don't need to play well to win games. Whereas I'd argue some of the MLS sides that I've seen take part in that competition, almost like things need to be going their way to be able to do so. But I don't know, perhaps some of that is as a product of the league itself, in the way that, you know, that you do feel pressures, but not necessarily the same sort of pressures as other players are feeling around the world and in places like Mexico. So then when push comes to shove and everything now has to go to a game where you have to win, you know, some players can step up, and it seems like in Liga MX, more players are able to do that than unfortunately in MLS. And it's a shame because, you know, there are lots of good players and good teams in MLS, but like I say, they just don't seem to have that little bit of something extra when you need it the most. And it's probably holding the league back, I'd say.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at lectricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's lectricebikes.com. USA Paraguay coming up later tonight. It's got Sebastian Salazar and Julie Foudy will be on the call for this one. Friendly action there on ESPN2 as the US returned to its first action since the Tokyo Olympics. And both of them were speaking about this very matter on Football Americas.
Thank you very much, Kay. Yeah, Julie, the last time we were together in a stadium to cover the women's national team was March 11th, 2020. Here we are almost 18 months later. We're still talking about the same thing, pay dispute between the women's national team and the federation, which this week on social media, of all places, seemed to take an even uglier turn. This tweet from the U.S. Women's National Team Players Union Twitter account, in response to the federation's announcement that they would be offering both the men's national team and the women's national team the same contract. Quote, USSF's PR stunts and bargaining through the media will not bring us any closer to a fair agreement. In contrast, we are committed to bargaining in good faith to achieve equal pay and the safest working conditions possible. The proposal that USSF made recently to us does neither. That, of course, drew a response from the federation through their official communications account. An offer on paper of identical contracts to the U.S. Women's National Team and U.S. Men's National Team, and to discuss equalizing prize money is real, authentic, and in good faith. A publicity stunt is a 90-minute one-sided movie, an obvious reference there to LFG, the movie that the players put together recently.
Spicy!
Your thoughts?
Too spicy on both sides. One, U.S. Soccer finally does put it in writing. They have been saying publicly they have actually offered it to the litigation team with the lawsuit, this same proposal. But I talked to Becca Rood today. She said it's the first time they've actually got it as a players association for the CBA negotiations with that lawyer group in writing. So that's a good thing.
Okay.
I don't quite understand the vitriol that comes from the players association side because of that. I think it's in response to them wanting to meet with the men and wanting those two groups to get together. But why, if you're U.S. Soccer, do you complicate matters even more by putting that little end in there about LFG? Yes, they're not happy with that movie. And yes, that movie is very, very one-sided. But Cindy Parlow, the president of U.S. Soccer, has done tremendous work trying to get to this phase. And you throw her under the bus when you send from your official U.S. Soccer comms Twitter handle that type of vitriolic statement. So I am tired of all the vitriol, because they are sitting down. They're actually negotiating this new CBA. They sat down in April. They had meetings in May. They've had proposals going back and forth. They sat down in August. So things are moving. So why it has to get so nasty in the public, I don't get. And I actually think U.S. Soccer saying, hey, look, the men have said this is actually something we want the men, women to get more. They should be paid more. So why not get the two at the table to try and figure it out?
The big sticking point here is obviously the FIFA World Cup prize money. And the Federation wants that to be equalized, but they want the Men's National Team Players Association and the Women's National Team Players Association to figure that out. Is that the way to get this deal closer to done?
I think the way to get this deal done is, one, you have to obviously get those players on the same page, right? Because they are going to have to figure out that pot of money. I think the way to do that, and now I've said this a million times, I'm going to say it for the people in the back again, is you put it into one pot.
Right.
You put all revenue into one pot. FIFA prize money is part of that for both women and men, right? You put sponsorship revenue in. You put gate revenue in. Everything, TV revenue, broadcast rights revenue. You put all of that into one pot, because I think you could make the argument, yes, the men do make more in FIFA prize money, but that will rise up with the women's side, and especially if the men are helping them make that argument. I think you could also argue the women possibly bring in more money on the sponsorship side, right? So I think it evens out in the end, and you get both teams actually wanting the other to be successful, and you're on the same team. They say one nation, one team. Well, this is a chance to show that. Like, let's cheer each other on rather than who's getting more, who's getting less. And I think you could come to a conclusion that's fair for everyone, including allowing the Federation to stay in business.
Should we talk some soccer?
No.
Let's do
it. Okay, can you tell I'm done with this equal pay stuff?
We got a match coming up against Paraguay. Paraguay ranked 50th in the world. Probably not going to be too much honest competition for the U.S. women. So what are you looking for from this U.S. team in their first game post-Olympics?
Well, they have said the first thing they did is they met about the Olympics. And they know that they need to turn the page on that. I don't think they're there yet. I think they're still looking at it, digesting it, assessing it, probably grieving still a little bit about it because it was such a poor performance. But it is a chance to say, okay, let's learn from this, grow, and move on. The challenge is you have to bring a very similar team, of course, because of these four games that are really a post-Olympic tour. So you don't have a chance to turn the page entirely on getting new players in, fresh, younger players in, which I know they will do. But you do have Mallory Pewin, Andy Sullivan, Sophia Smith. So three young players. So that's what I'm most looking forward to, is how this team will bounce back from a very disappointing Olympics.
First steps towards the next World Cup. Also the first match of Carly Lloyd's farewell tour. So plenty of reasons to watch tonight. Kay, we send it back to you.
And two very good reasons to watch. Sebi and Julie there, that game coming up this evening, USA against Paraguay. And Football Americas has been moved today because of this game, but there will be more talk about these very topics there, so make sure you stream the latest one.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Anyway, thank you so much for being with us for this. Stick around for extra time. We've got Ale, Stevie, Don, and Nadim will be with us too. Welcome Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. We have Ali Moreno, Nader Manua, Stevie Nicol, and Don Hutchison to answer the questions for you.
I miss the fern. Where is the fern, Don? Where is the fern?
With the wonky bookcase. Yeah,
you have to have your fern that you used to have, Don. It's incomplete without the fern.
Oh, I'll bring it back. I'll bring a bit of greenery in next time. It's
got the caps there, though.
It's a work in progress.
Nadim, your background's really boring compared to these two. You need to bring it.
No, what it is that for every year I do this media stuff, I'll get an extra piece of wood. So after a few years, I should have some sort of bookcase or something in there. The only issue will be trying to put medals in because I don't have any.
Nadim, the rookie.
Hang on.
Oh, there we go. There it is.
There we go.
Yay.
Okay. Now.
That is a fake plant if ever I saw one.
It totally is fake.
Tropical plant.
All right, easier that way.
Terrible.
All right, let's get to the real stuff then, the questions here. For Ali, how long do you think it will take this Eminem trio to gel and start playing like we expect them to?
I don't know, I would say 2-3 weeks, but maybe that's the amount of time that Kylian Mbappe is out with his injury, so maybe another month or so.
Okay, well, we'll see. Anyway, we'll move on.
It shouldn't take much longer.
It shouldn't.
Honestly.
Is it going to work, though?
Is it going to work between the three of them? Yes. Is it going to work with whatever is going on behind them? I'm not so sure.
All right. Divyansh says, is Carlo Ancelotti showing again that he's still a very good manager? With almost the same personnel as last year, Real Madrid look more dangerous offensively and are scoring more goals and creating more chances. Ancelotti the difference maker, Don?
Yeah, I think so. I think he's just a very solid appointment, isn't he? You're not going to get any frills. He doesn't go ballistic on the touchlines if they're missing chances or if anything's going wrong. I think he's very solid. He knows exactly what he's doing. He's a multiple Champions League winner as well. So I'd like to think he's going to stick around a little bit longer than he did at Everton.
Nadim, are we keeping you up? What was that noise?
No. I was just trying to put something into my background.
Ooh.
What's happening here?
I'm just trying to keep you happy, that's all. Are you okay with this? Or is this background okay?
That's fine, but...
I can't, no.
Is that a rocking horse? Is that what it is?
I think it talks.
Okay.
It's a mode of transport around the house.
Okay, and what's the horse's name? What's the horse's name, Nadim? What's the horse's name?
I don't want to go into that. I don't want to reveal too much on national TV, so I'm just going to keep it quiet. This is just the horse.
All right, we'll stop horsing around. Frank.
Hey.
Stevie, right. You've got to like that one. Right. Come on, Stevie.
All right, okay.
Stevie loves a little pun.
Well, I've got no idea. I can't see anything apart from Michelle. I've no idea what's going on. Okay. I'm trying to figure it out in my head.
So Nadim has just brought a white fluffy horse, a stuffed horse.
Yeah.
Not a real one.
Yes, a rocking horse that has no name. And then just to kind of bring you up to date, Stevie, we have Don with what looks to be a very tropical plant now in his background. Other than that, we're doing great.
Yeah, we're doing great, Stevie. Oh. Tropical plant.
Yes, it's a form of palm.
Nothing to be interested in there, no.
It's a very fake palm. All right. Don, you knew it was coming. What percentage chance?
What is it?
What percentage chance do you give Lewandowski to win the Champions League Golden Boot this season?
Champions League Golden Boot. What chance? I think he's the best number nine in the world. I've gone on record and said that. I think that the other guys in behind him, the Harry Kanes and the Lukaku's, Ronaldo's, sensational players. But he's the best number nine. I'm going to go 75%. I think Bayern will win it.
But the other day, he tried to stay safe and say 33.3%.
He's going out on a limb on one of those tropical plants that he's got back there when he says, I've gone on record as saying Robert Lewandowski is the best number nine in the world. Oh, really?
Well,
we didn't know that, Don. Thanks for telling us.
No, but
appreciate that.
No, but Ali, Ali, you should see it over in the UK. People talk about Harry Kane being the best number nine in the world, and people talk about
over in the UK
being the best number nine in the world, and Ronaldo being the best number nine in the world, and they are in the conversation for sure. I'm not the oracle. Lewandowski and I just think he is the best.
I tell you what, if Lewandowski was playing in the Premier League, we know what they'd be saying then, don't we?
Probably.
There you go. Right. Nadim, is Andreas Christensen the most underrated centre-back in the world right now? He has 37 clean sheets in the last 45 games for club and country. He hasn't put a foot wrong since Tuchel came in. Still, he never seems to get much recognition that he deserves.
I wouldn't necessarily call him underrated. I think he doesn't necessarily get some of the headlines other people get. But he's being picked by his manager. He's being picked by Tuchel. He's being picked by his national team manager. So the people that rate him the most, the ones who are most important are the ones who rate him the most. And he's playing in those sides. And let's be clear as well, you know, as a defender, he's got those clean sheets, but he's not done it by himself. So let's not try and go too deep into that. I think he's a very good part of good teams and good systems, and he's a very good player, but he's not underrated, and I think everybody knows that.
That's a question I wanted to ask.
I think the biggest problem with him is he can't stay fit. Like, we talk about Van Dijk and glowing terms. He's a good example, and the reason we do that is because for, 2 years, game in, game out, his consistency at an incredible level was just off the charts. And when you look at the numbers and you talk about Christensen having 37 clean sheets, I mean, that in itself is fantastic, but we don't associate with him with somebody like Van Dijk because he plays 5 or 6 games and then misses 5 or 6 games. And then he's got to start all over again. I mean, that's I think, the reason why, and as Nadim said, people that have an idea of what goes on don't underrate him. The guy just can't keep himself fit for a season, even one season. Always injured.
Are defenders allowed to claim clean sheets? Is this part of...
Yeah.
Is this part of what they do now?
That sounds like fighting talk to me,
I was thinking the
lads.
Same thing.
Since when do we give clean sheets to the defenders? I thought that was a goalkeeper thing.
Stevie, Nadim.
Listen, I'm retired. I don't even have these conversations
anymore. Hold on a second.
So
Think about who's saying this. What does he know about defending? In fact, what does he know about attacking?
Just giving you the right to reply.
Just asking a question.
All right. Stevie, is there one particular
game... Anything from 2 yards and in, he's your man.
Stevie, is there one particular game that you thought about the most after retiring in a regrettable manner, or are you the move-on-quickly kind of guy?
Move on. You move on. Listen, everybody has...
I know there's one there in the head, though, Stevie.
Everybody's had great games and awful games.
Stevie, right? I know there's one in the head. There must be one there in your head that still plays in your mind.
No, I sleep very well at night. No.
You know what's amazing about Stevie?
All.
What's amazing about Stevie is that...
You understand.
While he takes his position in regards to his career, you should see him on the golf course. He carries everything with him in the golf course. The last bad putt carries him from the first hole to the 18th hole, and he is not the most positive with himself when he's playing golf.
And I've heard that not the most patient either, I learned yesterday.
Although he had a great up and down today from a plug lie in the bunker. He was fantastic today.
Go on, Stevie.
No, I'm just saying, though, the thing is, I guess once you finish playing, eventually you understand that there's so many things that were so good and so many things that could have been better and some things that were rotten that you just have to accept them all as part of being a player and being a pro. And you can't get depressed about something that went wrong in the same manner as you can't walk around unless you're Mr. LeBeuf, were your World Cup gold winners medal around your neck every day going like that.
Yeah. As they say, Stevie, so don't look back in anger.
No.
All right. Stevie, I'm sure you know the answer to this one. I'm sure straight away you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. For Stevie, what will your FIFA rating be at the prime of your playing career? Would you have had high stats with defending or physicality?
What a stupid question. Of course it is.
Stevie, do you know about FIFA ratings?
You're right, it was an easy question, aye.
So, Stevie, if I give you, like, an example, say Trent Alexander-Arnold would probably be about an 87, just of his overall FIFA rating. In your prime, what would you give yourself? But that's out of 100, obviously.
I don't know, 90? Or 90?
Oh, I like it.
That's it. Make sure he's higher. Make sure he's higher than Trent. Yes, sir. I'm with you, Stevie.
Dad, do you know your FIFA?
I've kept the sort of eye on it. I don't pay too much attention to it in terms of what they mean. I mean, I've seen something on social media the other day where Kyle Walker, who's, I would imagine, by far the quickest player in the Premier League, his speed ranking, or whatever you call it, was low. And I think Kevin De Bruyne and I think Phil Foden walked out of the room. He's one of the quickest players I've ever seen, and he was down on his speed.
What would you give Stevie in his prime, Don? I think that was a prank that you saw.
Yeah, well, if Stevie's given himself 90, I'm going 91.
Diplomatic.
He was sensational.
Oh, my Don. Thank you, Don.
He was sensational on and off the pitch.
I see. He's still sensational off the pitch. I'll tell you that much.
Nadim, would you give Stevie a nice rating? Higher or lower than 91?
Yeah. You have to go higher. Let's just keep going until we get to 100. I'm saying 92.
For
me? Yes,
no, for Stevie Nicol at his prime.
Oh, I thought Nadim was giving himself 92. I'm going to walk away.
The attic door. Or the basement door.
Who's got the highest? Who's got the highest? Do we know?
Who's got the highest of you lot in your prime?
No, not us lot. The top boys.
Oh, the last time I looked, it was always Messi and Ronaldo. I don't know if it's changed in recent seasons.
What a guess that is, Kay.
Messi's 93, hey, I
think. What a gamble you took there, Kay.
let me tell you something.
I didn't know if, like, recently some of the young guns have started to, like, climb up their old... They're getting older, aren't they? But that was the last time
I looked. See all these stats. I'll tell you what. There was one thing I read a few weeks ago about the Bundesliga, which... I wasn't a huge fan of all this nonsense before, but I definitely completely had done with it. As soon as I heard and I read that Sulla from Bayern Munich was clocked as the fastest player in the Bundesliga at the weekend, I knew it was time to rip the thing up and put it in the bucket. Seriously.
I think Stevie's got it in for Sulla.
He was clocked at the fastest in the Bundesliga over the weekend. Are you serious? What?
Maybe there were some tired legs, Stevie. All right, all of you here, and we'll start with you, Nadim. In memorial of Manchester United's lost desserts, now that Cristiano Ronaldo's there and everybody's trying to eat well, what are the crew's favourite desserts? What's your favourite dessert, Nadim?
I would have to say a caramel sticky toffee pudding with a bit of ice cream on it. That's what it is for me.
Mm, okay. Solid choice. Stevie?
Sticky toffee pudding. Are you talking to me?
Yes, and shepherd's pie doesn't count as a dessert.
I can't even remember what a sticky toffee pudding looks like.
Anyway, I bet you can remember what it tastes like.
Dessert.
Oh,
I don't believe you.
Yeah.
Stevie, I brought some English chocolate in for you when I first started, and you wolfed it down.
Right.
So
I hadn't just eaten
like
Munchin
Tatties,
though, had I?
So you really are not a dessert guy?
I don't have a starter.
Okay. Honestly.
I don't have a starter, and I don't have a dessert. I just
don't
have,
you know?
I
mean,
yeah.
Don't you know that Stevie, his body is a temple. Okay. He respects his body and does not abuse his body. He doesn't eat dessert.
Then doesn't. All right. I can't believe that, Stevie.
What?
I'm not buying that.
Done.
Go ahead, Don.
Mine?
Yeah.
I'm gonna go tiramisu.
Cultured.
Yeah. Classic.
Classic.
I'm gonna go with my grandmother.
Stevie would definitely be. I think if you put a bowl of hot custard and chopped up banana, basic, I think Stevie's all over it.
It's one of your five a day in there. I think that might be too healthy for Stevie.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I'll take my grandmother's key lime pie.
Oh. Good choice.
Delicious. Good. And emotional as well. See, I'm emotionally invested with this dessert.
Yeah.
Oh.
That is true. Meant true comfort eating as well.
Oh, true man, meaning. I'm going to tell you something.
All right.
That brings back some memories.
Okay. Hopefully next time we're here, Nadan will step up his background game. Uh-huh. And we'll learn more about the FIFA cards.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Do you think that Stevie knew that the FIFA rating has to do with the video game? I don't think so.
No, I think so.
I'm not sure.
We'll see if the FIFA lads can help us. All right, anyway, ESPN FC is available daily. Thank you so much for joining us for the latest edition of Extra Time.